Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to another year of the Power Cosmic. It is your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, Comic-Con promoter and man of many talents, and some might even say philanthropist, but you'll have to know a little bit about the backstory. And joining me, as always, on the Power Cosmic, you know him, you love him, you read him in the pages of Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego Magazine, and soon the Jack Kirby Collector, the man from the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89-90 in Raynham, Massachusetts, every Sunday, selling you the lost treasures of your childhood and more, John Cimino.
What's up, everybody?
Well, John, I'm going to tell you what's up. We're all full of piss and vinegar, as my grandma would say, and we're all set to start off the new year with a bang. And I know this Christmas, John, you treated yourself to a great present under the tree. It was the collected works of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Omnibus. Why did you get that book, Johnny?
Well, first off, it was a me-to-me, an Alvin and the Chipmunks gift. It's like me and you were talking, and our buddy Jim Steranko came up, and I was thinking, like, oh, my God. You know, I have all these omnibuses, and how we love omnibuses, don't forget that, we always talk about that. But I was looking on my library, and I'm thinking, I don't have that Steranko Nick Fury stuff. And I was like, the Kirby stuff is good, but the Nick Fury stuff is what I was really, really after. So I went on Amazon, picked it up for nice and cheap, still sealed, obviously, and you can get those really cheap, especially with those holiday prices. And like I said, I put it under the tree, ripped it open, and I have to admit, I was not disappointed. That was some great, great stuff.
Well, you know what? Let's do that today. Let's talk about something special, near and dear to our hearts. The one, the only, the man with the iron fist handshake himself, Mr. James Steranko from Reading, Pennsylvania, 78 years young. Let's talk about what we know about Mr. Jim Steranko. Now, I know the name. As a child growing up in the 70s reading comic books, there was just one word. Steranko. It's kind of like Elvis or Charo or Prince. It's one name to identify a gentleman who has just brought so much to the world of comic books. He's a historian. He's an artist. He's a writer. He's a publisher. He's a man of many talents, as we were talking about. But let's go back, John. Did you know that young Jim Steranko grew up and wanted to be a magician? Did you ever hear those stories?
Yeah, and I've seen the pictures, like he was an escape artist. I think that was his big thing. Like, maybe magician too, but it was mostly an escape artist. I know he was a big fan of Houdini and stuff. And but it's funny, I just want to point out about Jim, that he is the most impactful artist of all time that did the least amount of work. You know, like, there's really, if you really think about it, his name is bigger than his work, and I mean that by, like, there's some stuff out there, but there's not a lot, you know? It's like, and if you look at somebody like Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Neil Adams, like the other big greats, I mean, they got boatloads and boatloads of, like, John Buscema, Sal Buscema, John Romita, they got boatloads of comics that they did, and if you think of, like, what Steranko has brought to the table, considering how big his name is and how respected he is, it just doesn't match up to, like, how much these other guys did. And I find that fascinating.
Well, no, you are right there in a point, because he did hit the road, or the world really paid attention to Jim, is when he did take over the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's the funny thing. We talk about this. You never know how fate is going to intervene, because, like I said, he had gone through the years of being a magician. He was also a big rock star in his hometown and on. He was a great guitarist. Did you even know that about his past? He was...
Well, Steranko, once again, Steranko is like, it's like a mythical creature. And you hear, Paul Bunyan. Who's the guy that worked on the railroads?
Oh, that's okay. John Henry. That's John Henry. Paul Bunyan was the lumberjack with the babe, the giant ox. There's all these legends and folklore about him.
Yeah, but that's what it is. It's like you hear all these legends about him. I mean, obviously, but also, and we get sometimes a few obscure like photographs. I mean, like, you don't really know. I mean, yes, he has a list of doing all this stuff, and how much of it is reality and how much it isn't. I mean, I don't know, and I'm not knocking it or anything, but I find that very funny. It's like, once again, the name Steranko, there's so much that comes with it. And it's like, he's so much bigger than even like his work, because like I said, he doesn't have that much compared to the other guys, and then it's like, but yet he's always in the same name. And then he was hired in like, I think it was 68, 69, at a time when they weren't really hiring anybody. And I think the only people who really came in at that time was Neil Adams and Steranko. They came in around the same time, and they both had a very impactful, obviously, run in the comic world. But yeah, Steranko has so much going out there, like, but I don't know how much was really real or anything.
Well, let's go back. Yeah, like you said, there are many myths and legends about Mr. Steranko and how he's done so many things. Like I said, he was a rock star, he was a magician, he was an artist, though deep down he was a big comic book fan, and he'll tell you how he loved the movie serials, and his uncle would bring him box loads of comic books as a kid, and he'd get into it. But it was in 1966, actually. He did some work. He worked, his first published comic book was an insert for Harvey Comics. It was called Spy-Man number 1 in 1966. But this is how fate intervenes. He met Stan Lee, and he inked a 2-page Jack Kirby backup story, which was Nick Fury. So, you know, that was it. But it wasn't until our friend and yours, Mr. Future Editor-in-Chief at Marvel Comics, Roy Thomas, happened to stumble across Mr. Steranko. Because what happened is Jim came into the office, as legend says, and Stan was really busy. I mean, at the time, we're talking mid-60s, he's out there doing everything, you know? But it was Roy who saw Jim's work and took it to Saul Brodsky, who was also on the staff there, and they both agreed that this art by Steranko was something unusual. It was not your typical art that had come through the door, and that they had to show it to Stan. So they went down there, and they said, you got to see this Steranko guy. So that's when Stan said, okay, here, give him a Nick Fury S.H.I.E.L.D. story. And that's what happened to that. So if it wasn't for Roy getting involved, we might have lost something in a way, because he was good at aping, is a term that a lot of the artists use when they come on a book. If there's a popular artist before them, they'll have the new guy mimic the style so the fans don't get too upset. So Steranko was good at mimicking the Jack Kirby style, but then it wasn't soon after he went into his own legendary pencils and inks and finishes. Like you said, he doesn't have a huge bibliography, but it's extraordinary because the dynamic graphics that he brought, it was never heard of. It was never seen. It was like pop culture. We're talking about the time of the 60s. Psychedelic, all that stuff was going on. Everything was changing. Free love, hippie movements, you know. And this guy was groundbreaking for what he did. Don't you agree?
Yeah, he brought the pop art. He also brought like the cinematography to comics. He brought all that, the surrealism and stuff.
Surrealism, exactly. Salvador Dali, the painter, was an inspiration that. You could see that in some of the pages. He'll do these full pages. I'm thinking of one where Bucky's meeting death, and they show, you know, Bucky Barnes, Cap's little sidekick, and there's all this very graphic imagery of, like, a body and a skeleton being blown up. And you know the page I'm talking about? It was from Captain America 111.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. This is what people didn't see that. This was not the normal, you know, your run-of-your-mill comic book artwork. So that's what made him stand out at the time. Even Jack Kirby, the legendary Jack Kirby, when he went on to do his New Gods, he created a character called Mr. Miracle, who was an escape artist in the New Gods series, which he said was also based on a young Jim Steranko. I mean, Jim, he was accepted by the masses very quickly. It was not like, hey, who's his hotshot? They love what he was doing there. I think they all wanted to be like him.
Well, he's also this charismatic very self-assured guy. I mean, we see Steranko, there's a swath, there's a sass about him, like that is...
He's got that je ne sais quoi, as the French would say.
Yeah. He's like Cary Grant. He exudes like masculinity, cool. And then when you see him, I mean, he's not really a big guy. Obviously, the padded shoulders, the full head of hair, that it's questionable if it's, I don't want to.
Well, whatever. But I'm just saying, you hit the nail on the head there. One of the New York Yankees, the famous New York Yankee, Joe DiMaggio, that he was always known to be such a professional off the field. He'd always show up in a suit. He was always a gentleman. He eventually married Marilyn Monroe. But he was just a class act. And I think that describes Jim Steranko. When you meet Jim Steranko, he is a class act. He's not going to show up in jeans and a t-shirt and a sweatshirt at a con or anything like that. He's always dressed to the nines, you know? He's always
got glasses, the white teeth. Tan skin. It's fantastic.
He's kind of like I said, everybody has a persona. Stan's a members only jacket and comfortable shoes and some khakis. That's Stan Lee, you know? Jack Kirby, you close your eyes, you picture him at a table with his sleeves rolled up, smoking a big cigar, and that's him, you know? But when you think of Steranko, I can't picture him not. I would see him in my mind at a drawing table in a suit. You know what I mean?
And smelling great.
Yeah, absolutely. And then back in the 60s, you see shots of him with the turtleneck and the big coif of black hair like Elvis or something. I mean, he was a rock star, basically.
Yeah, he did. And it's funny, at a time, too, when a lot of the people that, were working in comics weren't the most glamorous people. But he came in there with like a shot in the dark, like a shot in the arm, where it was just like, here comes the disco ball in the swinging 60s, and here he comes. Like, who's this guy? He's like the guy that's walking, like, in the hallway, and you can hear the clack, and you've got to turn it. Like, who's this guy out there? You couldn't help but notice him. And he has that about him. He has that air about him.
When I see him, I just think of the words cool daddy-o. You know what I mean?
He's absolutely.
He's cool. And you know what? He did a lot of revolutionary things. You might, stuff of legend, but Jim will tell you the truth. Comics Code Authority, Jim was the first one to basically draw a sex scene in the pages of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he did it in such a way it went over everyone's head, but the Comics Code picked up on it. Do you know what I'm talking about, Nick and his girlfriend?
That famous page, and it has it had the phone off the hook, but he had to put it back like on the hook, and then it was... They took out a scene and they had to put the gun in the holster.
Yeah,
and he actually thought that was more provocative than what he originally had. But what's funny about the omnibus, what we're talking about, is they show that page in there. They show the unedited page in there, and you see what they didn't really know what to do. But like I said, when they put the gun in the holster, it was kind of more
suggestive
provocative than what he originally had, because they didn't want that. And obviously, like I said, the phone had to be on the hook, not off the hook. But it was very well done. And if you look at Nick Fury at that time, it was Jim Steranko. I mean, and he said about that was his apartment, too. I don't know if you know that, but that was his apartment at the time in the 60s that Nick Fury was staying at.
Oh, I didn't know that. Like I said, there's so much about him. And then one of the funnier things is, it's not funny, but it's actually a loss. We talked about how he didn't do much in the world of comics at Marvel. You don't know a lot of the backstory, and you and I weren't there. I was just a kid, and you weren't even born yet. But the rumor is that Stan got ticked off at something Jim had done. And the last known appearance of any mention of Jim Steranko about to do some work at Marvel Comics was Stan posted in one of his little bullpen bulletins or whatever it was. It said, you might want to know what happened to jaunty Jim Steranko. Well, he's working on a brand new feature that'll appear in Marvel Superheroes. It's top secret, and he hasn't told us anything about what it is. To this day, we've never seen that. It was never shown. It was referred to, but it never appeared anywhere. So rumor has it that... from Steranko himself in a panel a couple years ago at a comic convention, that basically Stan Lee did not like the work that Jim turned in for the book Tower of Shadows, which was a retelling of the H.P. Lovecraft. It was like an homage to it, and Stan did not like H.P. Lovecraft. I know Roy's a huge fan, but Stan did not like it, and he didn't understand the story, or he didn't know what it was about, or whatever it is, but that was it. And then now the legend is whether he quit or was fired, but about a month later, you know, they cooled down, and that was pretty much it for the Marvel stuff. Do you know anything about that?
No, I didn't. But what I do know, I don't know if you remember this, that he was trying to get into all aspects. He was definitely an incredibly talented guy, like, of all aspects of the comic world, because they gave him Foom magazine. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, Friends of Old Marvel, Foom, yep.
Yeah, he was the editor of that. He was doing a lot, like, he was the guy that was putting that stuff together, and, you know... And that was like, I think that started in what, 1970?
1973. It was part of the Marvel Marching Society.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, he was doing that. And then eventually he did that book. What was it? The History of Comic Books? Remember that?
Yeah, The History of Comic Books. Yeah, it's two volumes, I believe.
Two.
Yeah.
And what is interesting about that, I don't know if you know this, Mitch, is that he drew the covers of both of them, but he drew all the Marvel and DC comic characters together on those issues. I don't know if you know that. I don't know if he ever got in trouble with that, but he had, you know, he put out this stuff. So he was a very big thinker, like he was a historian, and mm-hmm. he did that. He went through so many other avenues. It just shows you the talent that he did. That's why I think it wasn't his Martin legend.
No, you're right. He did get away from doing a monthly comic book. He did a couple covers after I told you that little stint there, or spiff with Stan. But like you're right, he went on to do the History of Comic Books. Do you have copies of that? Have you ever come across that, sold it?
Yeah, I get them from time to time. They're not so expensive. I think they sell like around, you know, in pretty good condition. You can get them for like $40 each. But it's, and there's a lot of little, I mean, I read it, it's a little wordy, it's a little missing a lot of stuff, but for the time, that was huge because there really wasn't anything out there that was doing that sort of thing, like the History of Comic Books, who gives a crap? But he was such a fan of that stuff that he was putting that out there. I think that had to be one of the, I'm not saying
well,
it's a deep.
No, the only other one that comes to mind is that Jules Pfeiffer book that we all have.
Yeah, the Great Comic Heroes?
Yeah,
the Great Comic Book Heroes. Yeah, that's a, so. I mean, it was definitely one of these ahead of his time when it came to that stuff. And it was great to see that because, like I said, who else was doing that stuff and writing about the history of comics other than maybe the little blurbs that kid knew what they would say in the comic books and stuff? But from a like a historical context like that would be in a library. There was really nobody else doing that.
Yeah, and I also remember...
Mitch, really quick, do you remember the ad that you saw that you could buy it in the Marvel Comics and it had a picture of Captain America and then you could cut out and get the History of Comic Books for, I think it was $9.95. It's in all, like, the late 60s Marvel Comics. Do you remember those?
No, I don't remember that ad particularly, no.
Yeah, it was an ad because of, to get the Volume 1 of that. And I remember it was the Jim Steranko Captain America next to the cutout box. That you could order that. So that was always pretty cool.
Well, I remember his stuff more from magazines in the 70s. I remember getting a movie magazine called Preview, Prevue. Mm-hmm. And I think that was from Jim's publishing company. And I always remember you'd see articles in there from him. I'm trying to remember the other one. Was it Comic Scene? He published
in... he also did Comic Crusader. That was an underground fanzine, and I'll tell you, he did a lot of the covers of that, too. And it's funny, you know, me and Roy were just talking about this, and we were looking for some dates on some pictures, and he said that, I think it was in Comic Crusader, like whatever numbers they were. So I started looking them up, and I noticed that, Jesus, this was an underground scene. I think that started in, like, maybe 66 or something like that, in the mid-60s. And, I looked at a lot of these covers, and I noticed that Steranko did a lot of covers. And just the one that comes off the top of my head, issue number 9 was the first colored cover that they ever did, Comic Crusader, and it was a Steranko cover that was on there. So it was interesting. So he was up out and about, and even today, Mitch, he still does like the variant cover and all that. I still see a couple of Captain America stuff coming around.
Oh, yeah, and then, of course, I'm going to talk about his big influence in my personal fandom. I know you're a fan of Harrison Ford, but Jim Steranko was hired by George Lucas and Steven Spielberg to create the conceptual art for Raiders of the Lost Ark. They did not have, an actor in mind yet. And eventually it becomes Tom Selleck. And then because of Magnum P.I., Harrison Ford gets a job. But before all the casting started, they hired Steranko to draw sequences from the film based on what they had planned. So there are these beautiful paintings of Indiana Jones. And he did the whole, they said, look, it's going to be a Humphrey Bogart character, rough and tough, you know, two-fisted, punching Nazis out with a cigarette in his mouth and all that stuff. So there is artwork done by Jim Steranko, conceptual art of what Indiana Jones is going to look like. And he's got, and the funny thing is he does have a cigarette in his mouth because we're talking the 70s and that was still the in thing to smoke cigarettes. So there's a shot of Indiana Jones in the desert, all, you know, cut and rugged looking with Nazis in the background, and he's got a cigarette out of his mouth. And in fact, they use that artwork on the Raiders of the Lost Ark board game that came out from Kenner in 1981. And because they didn't want kids to smoke in the 80s, they had to airbrush out the cigarette. So that's one of the things, if you ever see that board game.
I do remember hearing about that, too. Like, yeah, I do remember that through the grapevine.
Yeah.
But like I said, he was so talented. He had his hand. He had a hand in everything.
Oh, yeah, like I said, and let's not talk about him like he's passed on. He's still vibrant, 78 years old. Like I said before, the man has the strongest handshake, and I even ran for office and shook about 4,000 hands one year. But this guy here, he pulled me across the table, and you know my girth, John. You know I'm not a twiggy. He pulled me.
Not at all, Mitch.
Not at all, John. He pulled me across the table at New York. I put my hand out, and I always call him Mr. Steranko, but he always says, call me Jim. But it's always Mr. Steranko. And literally, he grabbed a hold of my hand and he hauled me across the table. And the funnier thing is, you know, you meet so many people at these shows, you don't think you're going to remember you or whatever. I interviewed Jim Steranko in 2008 or 9 for another podcast I do about Indiana Jones in New York years ago. He always remembers me, always. Like, whenever I see him, I mean, obviously I see him more and more because of the cons and stuff, but I would bump into him in New Jersey, I would bump into him in Boston or wherever, and he'd always know me by name. Hey, Mitch, how's it going? I picture you with a whip and a big fedora. So, I mean, the guy is just so alive. And then the funniest thing, I remember talking to Jim Steranko, I go up to him at a party in New York. Mike Carbonaro was having it. It was for Stan Lee, and it was George Perez, Stan Lee. First time I ever met Ming Chen from Comic Book Men, actually. This is like 2010. And there's Jim Steranko holding court. And I walk up to him, and he remembers me. And here's what he says. Name the top five most influential rock guitarists ever. And you're like, what? And that's what he was on. He was just going on about rock guitars, you know? Like, who was it? You know, who played with Elvis? Who did this and that? And he goes, your homework tonight is to research that and come back to me tomorrow and tell me who the top five guitarists are. And I thought I was a little kid back in Catholic school, and I actually went home and did my research. So I see him the next day. He's at a table with Carmine Infantino. I have the photo. It's Carmine Infantino, Stan Lee, and Jim Steranko. It's a nice picture, all three of them together. And as soon as I see Steranko, he points his finger at me. He goes, well, what are they? And I start listing all, you know, Wayne Cochran, whoever, that, and he was like, yeah, nope, nope, nope. And he starts, you know, back and forth about whether it was a valid answer. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. You never know what you're going to get from Jim Steranko. You're never going to have a dull conversation, that's for sure.
And he's always very engaging with fans and stuff. Like, he'll literally be, you'll be in line, and he'll be, like, believe me, I've seen this, and like, he'll be talking with, like, a fan, and he'll be talking with that guy for 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable, and this is just how he is. He is alive. And speaking of his handshake, I was at a dinner with him and a bunch of the other guys. It was around 11:30. It was so late at night, and here comes Jim Steranko. He's in this room. He sits down with me. And he shakes my hand. It was so hard, but it was like, you'd think the guy would be tired, but nope, that guy was
alive.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah,
it was 11:30 at night. You think everybody's starting to slow down, it's getting tired, and he's an older guy. But he comes in, and he sits down right next to me, he shakes my hand. I was like, and I thought this is exactly what I said to him. I'm like, Jesus. I was like, you always got that super soldier serum handshake. It's just so strong, and he hugs me. He's like, yeah, yeah, he's just alive, dude. Yeah, you're right about that. Alive.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's great to see somebody 78 years old full of more energy than you and I had when we were 25 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a different breed.
Oh, yeah, definitely a different breed there, too. And I'm trying to think of last year, I wanted him to come to my comic convention, and we talked about it, and I just didn't have enough room for him because Jim's got a lot of artwork, and you know, it's a disservice if you don't put it on display and let people see it all. So I just didn't have enough space because, as you know, I sell out of booth space within months, and we have so many creators trying to get into the show. I didn't want to just shove him in a corner, okay? So I write him a letter, and I apologize. I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Steranko. I just don't have the room this year. I wouldn't want to just put you in the corner, you know. Nobody puts Steranko in the corner. So he writes back to me at 2 in the morning, and it says, no problem, amigo. We'll get together next time. And you could hear his voice in your head, you know, because I'm like, who calls somebody amigo, you know? It's just funny. He's like, don't worry. Don't lose any sleep about it, amigo. You're my friend. We'll get together next time. But that's the way the guy is. I mean, even in a letter writing, he's engaging.
Oh, absolutely. And, Mick, we got to talk about... Let me ask you a question here. What was your best rendition of a character that he ever did? Is it Captain America? Is it Nick Fury? Is it Scorpio?
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say it's that Hulk cover, aren't you?
Oh, my God. See, I have to say, I loved... Even as a kid, okay... I'm a curvy guy. I'm a Hulk thick guy. I don't like when they make the Hulk like an Arnold Schwarzenegger guy. He needs to be thick. He needs to be like a bulldozer, like a big keg. Like I said, like how Kirby did him. But when I saw Steranko, his Hulk, it was like a long, lanky Hulk that was just, like, but fearsome. And it just blew my mind. Now, I'm going to be honest here. The first time I saw Steranko doing the Hulk wasn't that Steranko cover with the Marie Severin face that they redid. But it was actually the Captain America 110, and I looked at that, and I was like, I was just baffled by how the Hulk looked. And then a few years later, I saw that Fool magazine number 2, and the Hulk is lifting up the You know, he's got the chains around his wrists, and he's lifting up this rock. And I was like, I never seen anything like that. And for some reason, in my mind, I wouldn't probably like that. But the way that he did it was just so unbelievable. And then I saw the cover of the annual number 1, which I thought was great. But then I saw the ad inside the comic book with his original face, and it had the sweat, and it had like the crazy look. And I was like, I wish Stan wasn't afraid of that face, because obviously at the time Marie Severin was drawing the Hulk, and he liked the Hulk being a little good looking, a little better looking, not as fearsome. But Steranko's was fearsome, and I said to this day, even I always say that to Steranko, that like that Hulk face, I wish they never changed it because it was unbelievable. And I got to throw one more thing at you: the best, one of the greatest Hulk panels in the history of comics.
Oh.
I don't know if it's not the best. Is in issue 110, when the hands are coming, when Captain America's walking in the aisle, you remember that? He's walking down that alley, and then the Hulk's hands come through the wall, come through that, and just the picture of those hands, it's the Hulk's hands, these long, lanky, creepy hands, and I was, as a kid, I was like, whoa, and I will say to this day, that is one of the greatest pictures of the Hulk ever, any panel, and it's not even his whole body, it's just his hands. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and don't forget, he did two X-Men issues with Roy wrote, with Polaris and Havoc.
Polaris.
That's it. And like I said, it's a shame looking back that he didn't do more, but because he did so little with the comics, maybe that's why it means so much.
And the mystique. It also builds the mystique of him, because he never actually faded away. I mean, you got to think of
He's relevant. He wasn't a flash in the pan. He's still alive. You know what I mean? He's still part of the scene.
But a lot of these artists, like the ones, like it happened even to Kirby, it happened to Ditko, it happened to John Buscema. You could just see their art was just not quite what it was. You know, it just started dropping off. Steranko never really had that. He had that huge period, and then he was gone. And now he does, like, you know, like, obviously he does covers and stuff today, but, and he's still unbelievable, but he never had that knockoff. He kind of just had this, made this huge impact, and like, one bang, thank you, ma'am, and he was out, and you were like, whoa.
Well, yeah, you know, now that you say that, maybe it is better to go out on a bang, you know what I mean, on a highlight.
I call it, Mitch, I have to say it. I call it like the Jim Morrison or Jimi Hendrix syndrome. It's like these guys were so young, and they made such a huge impact, and then they died. So their mythology, like Janis Joplin's there too, their mythology kind of never went away. So, I mean, like, they always look bigger in the eyes of people than they really were, because they never kind of descended. I mean, look, Paul McCartney was a bigger star than any of them, but he kind of, like, you know, he's been around, you know, you see the human. He didn't have that legend. I mean, like, it's just like they were there, and then they were gone, and they had so much talent, and then you were like, whoa. So you never forget that burst of energy.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think about it. Like you said, he is so knowledgeable, too. I walked up to him, and I think it was last year in New York. He was at another Comic-Con, and he's teaching school at his table. He had a panel from some comic book, I think it was called The Cat, or whatever, the cover he did with it. And what he did was, he was pointing out how your eye went through the image. He said, here's the cat, the character. She's up on a roof, but your eye goes down to the, fire escape, because there's something down here in the scene, on the street. And then you go back up to here. So there's a whole story being told graphically without any words whatsoever, just with the imagery. And you got to go, this is all coming from his mind. He's his own movie studio. He's his own director and writer and film producer. And it's all in that head. And he puts it on the paper. And it's pure magic. I'm telling you, there's only so many people that could pull this off. There's a lot of comic book artists out there. But there's only...
Let's go a little more into what he did. I don't know if you remember that. What is it? The first... Is it a 14-page or a 7-page story of Nick Fury breaking into this place, and it's all silent, and then he gets shot at the end? He gets shot at the end. I don't know if you know about that story. Like, it's in one of I'm not a whiz at the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's in one of those issues, and I know people will recognize this. And the story is, when he brought them into Sol Brodsky, Brodsky said, I can't pay you for any of the writing. There's no words here. And Steranko said, like, I grabbed Sol by the shirt, and I said, you pay me that money.
Oh, I've heard that story. Yeah, he's holding them out the window.
Yeah. So that shows you the genius. And there's another one that the page panel is, because he did a lot of that espionage stuff, like the page panel is actually like a maze. You have to look at this panel, and then you have to turn the page and turn the page on its side to get to that panel, and then you got to go down. Like, he actually made the page a maze, so you had to turn the page while you're reading it just to get that whole espionage feel. That is amazing, and nobody was doing that stuff.
No, I'm telling you, he is the man of legend. It's funny you mentioned S.H.I.E.L.D. He's very critical about things. They asked him if he liked the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, and he says, nobody on that show knows how to throw a punch. They need to learn how to throw a punch. And they asked him, what does he think about Chris Evans as Captain America? He says, nah, he doesn't look like it. He looks like he just got out of college. So he's very vocal. He'll tell you what he's thinking. And you are right about the whole Saul thing about getting that money. Because what it was he was, they only wanted to pay him for being an artist and not a writer or something like that. And he wanted both checks. The funnier thing is, here's some legends right now for you. Did you ever hear that he slapped Bob Kane?
Yeah, you know what, Mitch? I was going to bring that up at the end. Yeah. The whole legend of Bob Kane. I know the story, but if you know it, you can tell me.
Well, no. We'll get into it. He did punch him out. And
No.
No, not punch him out. He slapped him.
Okay. But no, let's. Do you know the story?
No, go ahead. Go tell the story. Tell the story.
Okay. It was at a Comic-Con, and he was in an elevator, and then he saw, it was with Bob Kane and all his guys. So, well, somehow they were talking or something, and then Bob Kane, you know, I don't know if anybody knows Bob. Bob Kane was a very pompous, very, like, he thought he was part of the Rat Pack, you know, like, he had his entourage, he knew he had Batman, and, he had a big, probably even a bigger ego than Steranko. But they were talking or something, and then he did something, like, before he left the elevator, he gave him, he slapped him, like, on the face, like, this goes to you, kid, you know, and he slapped him on the face, like, you know, like, he was kind of, like, he was below him. So then, Bob Kane left the elevator, and then it stopped, and then It was seething. He couldn't believe Steranko was seething about this. And then what he did was he went back down the elevator and he went on the floor looking for Bob Kane. He said, I was going to smack this guy because I couldn't believe he like was so arrogant to do that to me. And he looked for him. He couldn't find him. So he went back to his room. And then he said, all night long, I was thinking, I'm going to get this guy. I can't believe he treated me like that, yada, yada, yada. So that morning, he went down into the foyer of this stuff, and he waited. And sure enough, eventually, Bob Kane comes out with his entourage. He went right up to him, and he said, hey, whatever he said to him, and he smacked him on the face. Now, he didn't smack him like winding up and smack him. He just made it look like, you don't do that to me. I'm in your level. And he's like, he smacked him in the face. But he wanted him to know that he couldn't do that to him, and that was Steranko's ego there too. But he wasn't going to get pushed around. And the legend has made it like, oh, he smacked him across the face and knocked him out and all that stuff. No, that really wasn't the case. But he was going to show him that he was on even keel, and so he had to smack him like ego kid him across the face because it was on his mind all night long.
Well, yeah. Well, there you go. That's the story there too. And the other thing I just wanted to mention before we close out, because we could go on, you could talk about Jim Steranko for days, okay?
Yep.
But we did talk about him getting up. You said he was getting his energy at 11:30 at night. I've heard, and it's been verified, the man only eats one meal a day,
yep.
And at 2 a.m. he goes jogging around his property with a pack of dogs that he has. He has a bunch of attack dogs.
Yes. And sometimes it's even said it's a pack of wolves.
Yes, so, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, I have heard these stories, and I've heard them from himself, too, because when I first met Steranko, I'm going to tell you something. Back in the day, a few years ago, you knew, Mitch, you knew me, too, when I got into shape. You know, like,
yeah,
when I get
yeah,
into shape,
yeah.
Like, I was a big, pretty big bodybuilder back in the day. I'm not as much today. I keep myself, I do my exercises all the time, but back in the day, I would keep myself in really tip-top shape. And what I did, and when I met Steranko, the first time I ever met him back in 2007, I was wearing a tank top too, and I was working, we were doing the mean teeth, we were doing all the hero endy stuff. But anyways, and I was ripped to shreds and I looked unbelievable. I saw him and I shook his hand and he touched my shoulders and he goes, oh, you're working out. And I said, yeah, I go, this body was forged by your incredible Hulk because I loved your Hulk when I was a kid. And he goes, that's what it is. He goes, you want to know what? I wake up every morning, I cycle for, this is what he told me, I cycle for 60 minutes, then I go outside and I run. And he goes, and I eat one meal a day and I keep in shape. Now, how much of that is true? I don't know. But you look at the man, he does take care of himself. So, you know, he's still thin. He doesn't have a little paunch. And he still looks great. So, I mean, I don't know how much is legend and how much is truth, but I know there is truth in that. But he loved the fact that I was working out, and I sent him, a few years later, I sent him a picture of me. And he wrote back to me saying, and I told him how his Hulk influenced me again. And he sent me back a letter. He goes, you look better than Arnold. And he goes, I'm glad I could do that for you. He goes, that's what I like to do for people. I inspire them. And yeah, so he was really adamant about that. He loved the fact that I worked out. So that was a big thing.
Well, there you go. Well, like I said, what? Anything else about Jim Steranko, or we're going to wrap it up?
He's amazing, though. He is amazing because I love these creators that are characters as well as they're drawing. You know, it's like they have that their own mystique and image that makes them who they are. And you can see their talents on paper. So when I look at Steranko's art, I see Steranko instead. I've met him so many times. I've talked with him, and it's just like, I like him better than his art. You can see that.
Well, I know. And like I said, he's not one to be pushed around. And another legendary story is that he told Joe Simon, one of the co-creators of Captain America, when he was working at Harvey Comics, this is, like I said, before Marvel, if Steranko asked Joe if he could draw one of the comic books. They had the Glowing Gladiator and the Magic Master. These really cheesy comics. I mean, they all tanked. They all sucked. I mean, let's be honest about it. So Simon tells him, no, you can't draw. He says that to him right to his face. You can't draw, so no, you're not allowed to play with any of my characters. So Steranko looks him, Joe Simon, right in the face and says, we're going to swear on today's show. Fuck you, Joe. So... There you go. And that's how we're going to end this show, because that's the type of guy you want. Jim Steranko, you want to be his pal. He don't take guff from anybody, okay?
He's absolutely.
That's the guy.
I'm going to throw one quick thing in here too, Mitch, before. His favorite person to ink his work was Joe Sinnott.
Yeah.
He said he was not as good as he was if it wasn't for Joe Sinnott. He will always give credit, and we know Joe Sinnott is
a
great, most underrated artist, inker of all time. But he loved when Joe Sinnott, and he said he used to love to get the pages and see how Joe Sinnott. He said he would fix up everything, and as good as he was, he said it was so much better with Joe. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, we could do a whole show about Joe Sinnott next time. Anyway, so that's it. We're going to finish up today's episode. Go out and get that 10-pound Marvel Shield collection omnibus. I think it's like 60 or 70 bucks on Amazon right now. There's actually a book they have out there with all of Steranko's Marvel work. You can just get that, too, that has the Captain America and the X-Men and I think the Hulk book or whatever it was.
Yeah, the cover.
Yeah, the covers. Cover. Yeah, you can get that, too. So anyway, we're going to wrap it up. And how do we end the shows, Johnny? Do we end him like a Jim Steranko?
And that's that.
And that's that. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.